Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie on Kingston City Council's approval of a temporary lease extension for the Lionhearts Laundry Program following the closure of the Adelaide Street Shelter.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. While the Adelaide Street Shelter at 38 County Street is winding down and will close on March 31st, Council voted at their last meeting to allow for a short-term extension of Lionhearts Incorporated's lease for the organization's vocational laundry program to continue. The daytime employment-focused program currently employs 8 individuals and provides laundry services to shelters and care providers across the city. The program is set to move to 309 Queen Mary Road and become part of the integrated services at the new transitional housing site. However, the location is still currently under construction. The extension for the laundry program to remain in the former Frontenac Public School building aims to prevent disruption until the new location is ready. The extension allows for up to an additional 6 months, starting April 1st. Lionhearts CEO Travis Blackmore spoke before council and stressed the impact of this program and the importance of it continuing without disruption.
This is about maintaining something that already works, supporting people in a practical, dignified way, helping partner organizations operate efficiently, and doing so without adding pressure to the system. Importantly, allowing the program to remain in place creates no additional impact to the surrounding community beyond what already exists today. This is not a long-term request. It is a short-term practical step to ensure continuity while permanent location is finalized. It allows us to transition responsibly, without disruption, to individuals, partners, or the broader system. Our program has been, in our view, very successful in terms of seeing them acquire housing. Some of them move on to acquire their own housing, so not just through Lionhearts transitional housing, but acquire their own housing. Some of which have come through the program since 2022. So it's got a proven track record. How it affects the broader community is we have a number of contracts with some local shelters to which we offer the laundry service, pickup, cleaning, delivery back. But you have 8 potential people that it could impact, coming already from their past and struggles, many of them off the street already, but again have gone forward to a brighter future, a brighter path forward, and this is a big piece to their puzzle or their life story.
While it is confirmed shelter services will not be continuing after March 31st, residents in the neighborhood surrounding the site still had concerns about Lionhearts continuing to operate from the location. A petition was presented to council from 88 residents around the Adelaide Street Shelter that asked the city not to renew or extend any further contracts with Lionhearts at the location after March 31st for any reason. One of these residents came to speak before council on the issue.
The entire Adelaide Street Shelter has been a prime example of what not to do when opening, operating, extending, and now winding down an emergency shelter. Our neighborhood, our city budget, and most importantly, the people Lionhearts was supposed to shelter and serve have endured more than enough from Lionhearts.
Councillors questioned Blackmore in regards to these community concerns.
I just want to acknowledge some concerns that we've heard from community members. I just want to ask you if you could confirm something for me. So, can you please confirm that if this extension for laundry is granted, that the building is only going to be used for laundry services and it will only be for staff members that you have hired? It won't be for guests, it won't be for visitors, it will not be a spot to hang out. Can you confirm that, please?
I can confirm that 100%. just for staff, just to do the laundry contracts. It's a 9-to-5, basically.
And the residents in the area have asked that you move faster. Can you?
There is, if Queen Mary Road is ready on the 1st, we'll be in there. If it's ready on June 1st, we'll be there too.
When it came time to vote on the extension, Councillor Gregory Ridge pointed to the message received from neighbors of the site.
I have had a number of very long discussions with constituents that live around the Adelaide Street Shelter. We've heard some of those concerns this evening around how the operations have gone there or how they've affected the people that are living there. And I think it's important to try and make that distinction. And the message that I've received from constituents is very clear in terms of the petition, in terms of it, which is that they just do not want that management to continue in that space, even with the laundry program.
However, Councillor Gary Osteroff pointed to the impact this program has for those employed and the city's network of services.
The value that's going to be given to those involved in the vocational training and how it benefits the vulnerable in our community. And I think we might be taking our laundry for granted at home. We really should not, because it does give a lot of dignity and self-worth and for the givers and the receivers here, and we can be part of the giving here.
With a vote of 10-3, the city will enter into a lease agreement with Lionhearts for the use of 38 County Street for vocational laundry services for not more than 6 months, commencing April 1st. Following the expiry or termination of the lease with Lionhearts, the city will move forward with the demolition of the former Frontenac Public School building. With the end of shelter services just a few days away, Councillor Gregory Ridge asked Blackmore about lessons learned from the Adelaide shelter.
My one question for you is, looking at this entire scenario with the Adelaide Street Shelter in the space, is there one piece that you could point to that you would be a lesson for any organization running a shelter space or any service for the vulnerable that you've learned from this?
It's tough. I think every organization out here would say more funding. You feel like you're putting Band-Aids on issues. And trying to triage as best as you can, but you're equipped with Band-Aids. I know funding across the board is an issue for any agency whatsoever. That's what I would say, more funding and changing hearts and minds to really understand the issues of everything you've heard tonight, whether it was the CTC pieces. It's hearts and minds toward actual real human beings. And seeing them at one point and wanting them to be restored to some extra afforded purpose, maybe some extra dignity for their life, and realize they're a human being.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Now over to CFRC's Henry Walker with a story by Michelle Dory Forstell, LJR reporter for the Kingstonist, about funding cuts that leave the Kingston Native Center and Language Nest's services at risk.
Thank you, Dinah. Federal funding changes set to take effect Wednesday, April 1st, 2026, could significantly limit the Kingston Native Center and Language Nest's ability to support the city's urban indigenous population, unless the decision is reconsidered. According to a release, the impact won't be abstract for those who rely on the center. The Kingston Native Center and Language Nest, KNCLN, which opened in 2023, is part of a network of Indigenous-run friendship centers that provide cultural programming and frontline social supports in communities across Ontario, reflecting the reality that over 50% of Indigenous people in Canada now live in urban areas. The funding being reduced is not tied to a single program. It forms the operational backbone that enables friendship centers to function, supporting everything from cultural programming in schools and weekly programming rooted in traditional craft and cuisine, to mental health navigation and housing support for people experiencing homelessness. Without it, organizations like KNCLN say they will be forced to scale back. These cuts undermine trust that has taken time to build, said KNCLN Executive Director Brandon Markle. When funding disappears, community members don't experience it as a line item. They experience it as the center no longer being able to help their grandmother, their children, or their family. At the core of the issue is the Federal Urban Programming for Indigenous Peoples, UPIP, fund, administered by Indigenous Services Canada. The program's budget is being reduced by $240 million, from $267.5 million to only $27.5 million, an almost 90% reduction, leaving Ontario's 31 friendship centers to share just $5.8 million this year. But federal documents frame the change differently. In materials describing the program, the government emphasizes its ongoing commitment to supporting urban Indigenous communities, describing UPIP as a program that helps fund services and partnerships across the country. At the same time, internal briefing notes confirm that the recent increase in funding was temporary, a two-year enhancement introduced in the 2024 federal budget. That enhancement allowed friendship centers to operate with what many describe as adequate funding for the first time in decades. KNCLN staff noted, however, that because the center opened in 2023 during that funding window, it has never operated under the lower long-term funding model now being reinstated. Under the new scenario, not only is the temporary enhancement disappearing, the center's remaining core funding is being cut by more than half. The uncertainty alone has caused me a great amount of sense, Markle said. Without stable funding, we can't plan responsibly or guarantee that the services people rely on every day will continue. Advocates say the situation reflects a deeper issue. Funding for urban Indigenous services has been long structured as a short-term or project-based, rather than stable and needs-based. In Kingston, where City Council has formally committed to advancing reconciliation through its 2023-2026 strategic plan, the center plays a key role in bridging systems that often fall short for Indigenous residents. Staff deliver in-school cultural programming, they support clients navigating mental health systems, and they provide culturally safe assistance for those facing homelessness and posing instability. The center has also been expanding its reach, including partnerships like a recent collaboration with Queen's Law to improve access to Indigenous legal services. When that capacity shrinks, the effects don't stay within the organization. According to Markle, they ripple outward. He expects the cuts to the center will place additional strain on already stretched local systems, from housing to healthcare. Recent funding decisions affecting other community services in Kingston have raised similar concerns, with local organizations warning that uncertainty can quickly ripple through frontline supports, including impacts outlined in Kingstonists' recent coverage of provincial cuts to consumption and treatment services that potentially impact local services. Federal messaging emphasizes support, but it does not directly address the scale of reductions facing friendship centers. Instead, the changes are described as the end of temporary funding and a transition to a revised program model. For organizations on the ground, that distinction offers little reassurance. Being left in limbo creates chaos, Markle said. The Ontario Federation of Indigenous Friendship Centers has called on the federal government to work collaboratively with friendship centers to develop a stable, long-term funding model, one that reflects actual operating costs and preserves the gains made during the recent funding increase. For KNCLN, the issue isn't just what it lost immediately, it's what cannot be built. Markle explained that decisions at the center are guided by seven-generation stewardship, a long-term approach rooted in care, continuity, and responsibility to future generations. Relationship building takes time. Stability matters. Sudden funding changes, he said, can undo that work quickly, shifting the consequences onto the future leaders and generations. These aren't short-term impacts, Markle said. They shape what our children inherit. For the people who depend on those services, the distinction between a cut and program shift may matter less than the result. We are asking the federal government to reconsider, Markle said. More information on the Kingston Native Center and Language Nest can be found on the KNCLN website.
Thank you, Henry, and to Michelle Dory-Forstel of the Kingstonist for that story. Coming up, we have a story by Brenda Little, LJR reporter for CJPE County FM in Picton, on the Affordable Housing Corporation's updates to Prince Edward County Town Council.
What is affordable housing? Ontario's definition is a cost that does not exceed 30% of a household's gross annual income. Considering the price of housing in Prince Edward County and the fact that many residents struggle to attain employment that pays above minimum wage, it seems there is no affordable housing. In 2019, the municipality created the Prince Edward County Affordable Housing Corporation to address the needs, and to date, $750,000 has been invested, but there is still no affordable housing. Some councillors and their constituents are losing faith and question the investment. Tuesday night, Councillors St. Jean and Nyman took the podium to explain the situation, and as board chair and vice chair, they have invested heavily with their time. Councillor St. Jean wants the public to understand the difficulty securing government grants for rural areas, the time it takes, the environmental requirements, and the process to acquire the appropriate land. Councillor Phil St. Jean tells us more. Councillor St. Jean, you and Councillor Nyman gave very detailed information about the Affordable Housing Corporation and what's happening with it. Can you talk about what you would like the public to know?
Specifically, it's not about so much the two projects that we're currently working on. It's about the information to help people to understand what it takes to build affordable and attainable housing. The challenges, whether it be financial, the cost of building, or more importantly, the challenges that every developer, and make no bones about it, we're a developer of affordable housing, that we all face. And in this case, it's whether it's soil remediation on a site that doesn't quite meet the standards for residential housing, or even the various levels, because every property before you build on it has to have an environmental site assessment done. You typically have to have hydrogeological studies done. There's a long list of studies that need to be done to prove that the land is safe to build on. And I think a lot of members of the public, and I didn't know much about this until I got into this position, they don't understand the depth and breadth of issues that you can run into and the challenges that you can face to get it done, and the timelines. As we presented in the one slide deck, it can take, on average, not maximum, average 56 months to get to the point where people are moving into a place. If you do traditional builds, not modular, you can add another 18 months to that. So that's the information, I believe, that all of the public needs to know. That, and I also want their support to help us to build affordable and attainable housing, as Councillor Pinnell suggested. Fundraising and donations would be great.
And the grants that you apply for, it takes a very long time, and then, you know, you may or may not get them.
Yes, absolutely. It does take a lot of time. There's a lot of background work, and the required studies that I mentioned, those are all part of those applications. You have to be able to prove to a lender or a grantor that their money is going to the right place. So all of those standards, all of those studies, all of those requirements, they tie into your grant funding and even your loan applications, because nobody will lend you money for dirty land. You have to prove that it is clean and ready to go. It's a passion project. But it's a passion project that we're willingly walking into with our eyes wide open and our minds wide open to try to figure out how can we do this to better serve the people in our community that they need affordable housing, they need attainable housing.
You have some pretty impressive people on this committee. Can you tell me about them?
Well, yes, we do have a very impressive board. When we did a call out, I believe it was in October of last year, we had specific requirements that we were looking for. People with planning skills, development skills, nonprofit housing skills, and generally a good understanding of building and our community. And we got that with each and every one of the new board members, Penny Morris, Ted Elborn, Hillary Spriggs, and Mark Gustless. And they are all, you know, they've rolled their sleeves up and they dived in to make sure that they're contributing in a big way. And I've said it a number of times to fellow councillors and members of the public, since they came on board, their first meeting was in November, we've achieved so much in 4 months, less than 4 months, far more than and this isn't to take away anything from previous board members, just the ball finally started rolling for us. Instead of pushing it uphill, it's now running downhill, and we're chasing it, and we're excited to be in the game.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Up next, CFRC's Juliana Gonsalves is reading a story by Sarah Williams, LJR reporter for the Napanee Beaver, on Bath Artisans' upcoming spring art show and sale.
Thank you, Dinah. Since 1991, the Bath Artisans have been at the epicenter of creativity within and around the community of Bath. The Bath Artisans 2026 Spring Art Show and Sale returns April 25th and Sunday the 26th from 10 to 4 p.m. The event will take place at St. John's Hall in Bath. The group's mission is to promote interaction among members by sharing knowledge while encouraging members working in diverse mediums. Another key component of their mission is to support the display and sale of creative pieces in both local and remote venues. The Bath Artisans have a current membership of 32 people, including watercolorists, acrylic and oil painters, woodworkers, jewelry makers, fused and stained glass artists, glass painters, fiber artists, sculptors, card makers, and photographers. There are 17 artists taking part in the upcoming show and sale, representing a varied selection of paintings in oil, acrylic, watercolor, and mixed media. Some artisans create handmade cards, hand-painted alcohol ink tiles, and more. One thing is for sure, the spring show and sale promises something for every taste and every budget. Once again this year, there will be a draw for two pieces of art, one for each day of the show. Tickets are $3 for $5, and one winner will be drawn at the end of each day. All money raised will go to the local Lions Club to help support their three district food banks. In these uncertain, financially challenging times, this support is needed more than ever. For more information, visit www.bathartisans.info/mayshow.
Thank you, Juliana. Coming up now is Ted Evans, LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, on Loyalist Township Council's approval of an amendment to a zoning bylaw to permit the Windsor to house an alternative health facility.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township Council approved an amendment to a zoning bylaw that will permit the Windsor in Amherstview to house an alternative health facility and add additional site-specific provisions, including more parking. This matter has come back to council multiple times and has now been approved. Kingston Health Sciences Center also made a presentation about the facility at the meeting. Executive Director for Patient Care and Deputy Chief Nursing Executive with Kingston Health Sciences Center, Tom Hart, spoke about the feedback they received and the work they've done since.
Of course, we take our role very seriously. And after the council meetings and public feedback, we had a KHSC senior leadership debrief on the feedback from both the public and the council. And we were already taking action to try and alleviate some of those concerns. So we've engaged a real estate agent to try and look for parking options. We've worked with the owner of the home to try and arrange a shuttle for employees to alleviate some of the parking congestion. We've asked that the owner of the home commit to having a stop sign prior to the sidewalk, which they have committed to do.
Hart noted the type of activities that go on in the building and how their partnership with Loyalist Township can move forward.
All activity within the building is regulated, supervised, and aligned with provincial health policy and the Public Hospitals Act. We have a robust governance, safety, and operational controls in place. And of course, they're subject to continuous monitoring and improvement. Our commitment to the community and council, KHSC, we have a very long history and proud history of collaboration with our municipal partners, and we are very committed to transparency and ongoing dialogue, and we have respect for the local concerns along with our regional health obligations. We are certainly open to input on additional safeguards and operational adjustments, and very willing to work with council and the public to strengthen assurances and comfort level.
Residents came forward again with concerns about on-street parking and public safety.
It's just a kind of a concern of being bullied. I don't feel as a member of the street that they are equal neighbors to us, and their initial plea to amend the Residential Uses Act and have themselves considered residences when it's primarily a temporary facility is bad form and bad taste.
This small infill subdivision of ours has gone through a lot. We finally had our developer finish the work, and there's a lot of problems with that developer. Now we have this Windsor thing, we have the school ongoing. It's 250 meters of road, but it seems a lot of the development and a lot of the problems are in this one area. And as residents, we're constantly being bombarded by this.
The Windsor had already been housing the alternative health facility before they received official approval from council. They will now provide 64 on-site parking spaces, an increase of 13 spaces from what was initially proposed, and an increase of 30 spaces from what exists today. Councillor Paul Proderick noted residents' concerns.
There are lots of presentations. I think the views of the populace along Park are fairly clear. The parking issue, the school, construction, all these different things, it's like the residents have been bombarded for X number of years. And I'm hoping that we can develop a parking through the staff, some kind of parking zoning commitment to whatever, that alleviates some of that stress. And that further down the road, when the building across the street is finished, we might look at a more permanent solution to some of the stresses on Park Street, because we all know when it was built, the entrance to the old church was there, but certainly it was a different once a week type thing. And having been a member of that parish, we didn't fill the parking lot very often. So I can appreciate what the residents have said. Our hands are tied in terms of legislation, Ontario Land Tribunal, and this is the best result of for the residents, a situation that is challenging at best.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend assured residents they're doing all that they can.
We want the public on Park to know that we've heard them. And that we are doing what we can within the limited tool set that we have to try and address those concerns meaningfully.
Councillor Mike Buderick showed his confidence in staff coming up with a viable solution.
We will have an adequate solution proposed by staff, I can guarantee that.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story, and also thank you to our sponsor. Today's edition of The Corridor is brought to you by Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Learn more about Kim and local listings for your new home via kimpurcell.ca. Coming up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region. And coming up for Tuesday night weather, we've got showers with a low plus 2. On Wednesday, we'll see cloudy skies with a 30% chance of showers and a high plus 8. Cloudy periods and a low minus 3 on Wednesday night. On Thursday, we'll see a mix of sun and cloud with a 60% chance of rain showers or flurries and a high plus 4. On Thursday night, we'll have cloudy skies with a 60% chance of showers and a low minus 1. And on Friday, we'll have cloudy skies with a 60% chance of showers and a high plus 10. Friday night, cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a low plus 5.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.